Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I am going to be talking with Philip W. Stewart. He has come here to talk to us about his new book, a really interesting project. It's called Projected History, a catalog of the national stories produced by Universal Newsreel. And this is volume one, and it covers 1929 to 1930. So Philip W. Stewart was born and raised in Southern California. He graduated from San Diego State University with a bachelor's in radio, television, and film, and he has also since acquired his master's in business management. Phil was a member of the U.S. Air Force for 21 years, spending most of his military service involved in video production and multimedia management. He's been an aviation motion picture film researcher and consultant in Alabama. He's owned a video production company in California, worked as a TV producer director in Arizona, managed a cable channel in Michigan, and currently manages a government multimedia facility in Florida. In his spare time, Phil volunteers as a motion picture researcher for the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force. He is the author of three historic film-related books. His first was Battle Film, U.S. Army Signal Corps Motion Pictures of the Great War, and this one actually was awarded Best History Book of 2007 for the Reader Views Literary Awards. His second project was War Wings, Films of the First Air War, and then Projected History, which is what he is here today to talk to us about. So Phil is also putting the final touches on his latest work, America's Film Vault, a reference guide to the motion pictures held within the U.S. National Archives. Phil is a member of the American Aviation Historical Society, the League of World War I Aviation Historians, and the Military Writer Society of America, among others. He and his wife and his two cats live semi-quietly, as he puts it, on the Emerald Coast of Florida. And you can find out more about him at his website, pwstewart.com. So with that impressive bio said, welcome to the program, Phil.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, that is quite a litany of things that you do, all related to film, media, history, military. It's very, very interesting life you lead.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Projected History, this is such a well-researched and documented book for a very specific audience. I understand that you kind of stumbled upon this project. It wasn't something that you were actually researching when you discovered this archive.
That's correct. I was at the National Archives researching other work, and this goes back into the early to mid-80s, and they were located downtown in the National Archives building downtown as opposed to where they are now. And basically, the place is like a maze, and you go here and you go there and you check out this and you check out that.
And that's in D.C.?
And that's in D.C.
Okay.
And basically, back then, they had this place sectioned off, and there was this rows after rows of catalog card furniture. I started snooping around there and basically found 600,000 subject matter cards relating to Universal Newsreel. And it's one of a few newsreels that are in the National Archives. But this one seems to be, based on my research at any rate, very complete. And, you get sucked into that kind of stuff, and you start looking at it, and you get deeper and deeper and deeper. And by the time I finally got myself out of there, I really got enchanted with the whole idea of what history was there on film and how come I never heard of it before.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I did and checked around and stuff, I found out that the people in the National Archives and some movie producers and the professional film research people knew it was there. But really, the American people didn't know it was there. It's a fabulous research tool. It's a time machine in a sense, and I just got enchanted by it, and then decided that, you know, some way somehow I need to get the word out to folks that this stuff actually exists.
Oh, I think it's great, and you actually discovered this in the 80s. So this has been a project that has either been in the works or on the back burner for a long time for you.
Yeah, it's been about 25 years trying to get this all together, along with all the other projects I was working on and actually working for a living.
Yeah, right. When do you sleep?
Yeah, there you go. Not enough.
Yeah, I bet. So tell us where your love for film actually began. You must have been exposed to something that really turned the light on for you when you were a kid.
Oh, as a kid, there was an occasion back when I was 5, 6, 7 years old, and, you know, watching the old original black and white Mickey Mouse Club. They did a show on how to put a TV show together on the road. And even back then, that impressed me quite a bit. So I always had that idea. And then in high school, I developed a radio station at the high school. And then when I got to college, I immediately went into the TV and film department and got my degree there. So I've always been around it. But I've never, it was later when I really got into the research, when I happened to be living in the Washington, D.C. area. And I got this letter one day from a guy in England saying that he had been talking to the Pentagon and also to the U.S. Embassy there, trying to find some World War I American aviation film, and then was told that none existed. So I kind of took that as a personal challenge, and that's when I started searching around trying to find it and ended up over the National Archives. And during that process, I ran into this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Was that for battle film?
What happened in the meantime?
Yeah, you've got so many little projects on the go. It's so interesting.
When I was in there looking for stuff, I found the World War I stuff the guy was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I used that information, communicated that to him, made some copies for him, sent it to him, and I said, wow, this is a good thing, you know, and I ended up using all that information to create my own aviation film company at the time and produced, directed, and distributed 8 different World War I and World War II videos.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all that information in a filing cabinet, and then as I did more research and more people came to me and asked me for this and that, like, you know, is there a film on the B-24 and how to do this or do that, or is there a film on X, Y, and Z? I kept up and I kept on getting more notes and more notes and more notes, and finally got to the point where I was, as I was moving around the country doing all the jobs that you articulated, you know, I finally said, well, either I got to junk this stuff or do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to do something with it.
Do something with it, absolutely. No one else is.
That was the other point.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's a big secret. They don't want, they being the National Archives, I don't think has done a very effective job of advertising or getting the word out or promoting what they have.
Right.
They spent their money where they should have spent it, which is saving the film and getting a catalog. But unless you're part of that area or that expertise or familiar with the National Archives, you wouldn't know that it's even there.
So how did they protect this film? Is it on digital form at this point?
At this point, a lot of it is.
Okay.
And they're doing more of that. Their first thing they had to do is the early film was all nitrate film, and you hold a match within 3 feet of it, and it burns.
Oh, wow.
Okay? And it disintegrates real rapidly. So mm-hmm. Their first project was to get all that transferred in the 30s and the 40s and into the 50s and early 60s to get as much of that film that survived on nitrate transferred. And they did a pretty good job of that. They still had a fire there, and I believe 1976, that burned a whole bunch of film up.
Mm.
Matter of fact, part of the Universal collection was burned up.
Mm.
And lost forever. But that remains has been transferred to videotape, and now is in a digital format in some cases, and they're continuing the process.
Mm-hmm. And so anyone can go there.
Anyone can go there. It's the property of the United States government, therefore it's owned by the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have some requirements, and there's certain things you can do and you can't do, and there's rules you got to follow. But it's there for reference and research. They'll bring out a copy of the original film. If they don't have a copy at their expense, they'll make a copy for you. If there's a videotape copy, they have a whole rack full of VHS machines. You can make your own VHS copy to take home with you.
Wow.
You know, you got to bring the tape, but they have the machine set up if you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to bring in your video camera, if it's film and it's on the on the screen, you can videotape it. So there's a certain amount of flexibility. They do have rules,
mm-hmm.
but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
The point I'm trying to get across is that it is there.
Right.
All the efforts on all my books is based on the fact that this resource is available to the American people, and all they need to do is know it's there.
Yeah.
So if you're a history buff or an airplane buff or this buff or that buff, even a writer who wants to validate what you're writing about, because if you're writing about Lindbergh, there's a 500,000 feet of Lindbergh footage in there that'll tell you everything you want to know about Lindbergh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you want to write about his takeoff going to Paris and how bumpy it was in the mud, you can actually watch it. So you make sure that you can write properly about it and correctly about it.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of that type of stuff. And then there's the genealogy issue on it, because a lot of the people in these films, and some of the films, not all of them, are identified in some of the paper documentation. So if you know where you're going and you know where you want to go, if Uncle Henry was ever at a certain place
mm-hmm.
at a certain time, there's a pretty good chance that there was a newsreel footage of him somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the other issue.
Yeah, I know. I had heard that was another great aspect of this project that you've done, that there is a genealogy link, and with so many people wanting to go back and trace their family roots, I mean, that is an amazing resource.
Yeah, and I think so greatly. I was rather surprised, too, when I went through the paperworkers when I was working on War Wings, films of the First Air War. I found documentation, you know, here's a film, and they're panning 150 people that belong to the 94th Aero Squadron. And there is, in the paper records, a whole list of everybody's name.
Wow.
So you can follow. I mean, it's not sharp.
Mm-hmm.
But they're there.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. So it all depends on what you're interested in. My purpose is just to make sure people know it exists.
Know it's there. So with Projected History, this is the newsreel footage from Universal. Mm-hmm. So for those, I'm sure people listening today, most of our audience will know what a newsreel is, but can you just give us an idea of what that actually is?
Okay. Newsreels were started back in the 1910s area as silent news film. Basically, individual stories that were edited together to tell about significant events or politics or whatever. They were basically the evening news of the 1920s and 1930s and 40s and 50s and up until the mid-60s, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, there were five major film companies that were putting these things together, and Universal was one of them. And Universal in particular was started in 1929 and went to 1967. And basically they were twice a week. They were sent out to the local movie palaces in towns, and basically that's how people got some of their news. If they'd, in addition to the newspaper that was on and radio, this was basically before television, and this is how they got some news. They got to see what was going on instead of just reading or hearing about it.
How much time was devoted before the movie to the newsreels?
The newsreels were part of that package that came with the movie and the cartoon, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
it basically was 5, 6, 7 stories, depending on the length of it, and the average length was between 8 and 10 minutes. So they were really jammed in there, and basically highlights of what was going on with a narration track explaining it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was the precursor to the newsreel? I guess it was the newspaper and the radio, like you say?
Basically, the newsreels, it was the newspaper first, and then if you take a look at it in a chronological order, radio per se really didn't happen until the mid-20s,
mm-hmm.
early 20s, I mm-hmm. guess. And the newsreels actually started as actualities in the 1900s, and then those developed into the news stories type of thing on film and with titles. And those happened about 1910, started in 1910, 11, 12 area. So, you know, Hearst Movie Tone and some of those others started all the way back then.
Incredible. So what was these companies' major motives for putting out the newsreels? Because these were film companies. These weren't news
Correct.
Corporations, you know?
Basically what they were trying to do, all of them, were trying to get people into the theater to see their movies.
Mm.
So what it was a loss leader.
Marketing.
You got it.
Yeah.
Come see our latest movie, and oh, by the way, you'll get to see our newsreel and keep you up to date on the news, and you can watch one of our cartoons.
Yeah. Oh, times have changed.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
True.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Whether you've already written your manuscript or are contemplating writing one, you will need to create a book proposal. ReaderViews has a coaching service to help you create an enticing book proposal for your work of fiction or nonfiction. In fact, ReaderViews will even submit your book proposal to publishers and agents they have created a relationship with, and then they promise to pursue these submissions. Go to ReaderViews.com today and click on Services for Authors to find out more information on book proposals and how ReaderViews can help you. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Philip W. Stewart, author of Projected History, a catalog of the national stories produced by Universal Newsreel. You can find out more about Phil through his website, pwstewart.com.
Some of the same marketing things that you see today on television, there are still things that they developed way back when.
God, that's so fascinating. Well, what kind of stories in that time frame that this first volume is looking at with 29 and 30, what kind of stories were covered back then?
A lot about new technologies, primarily the airplane, air transportation. Lindbergh was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
All the record-breaking type of things that went on there. A lot of sports, football, college football, and boxing were the big things back then. We think of 1929 and 1930 as the fall of the stock market, similar to what we're doing today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But really, the newsreels, at least the Universals, didn't really touch on that a lot until the later years, 32, 33, because at that particular time, most the average Joe was not involved in the stock market and everything. And in the 29 and the early 30s, there wasn't a lot of repercussion at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, some of the senior leadership were having difficulties at that time, but there was a lot of denial going on in those first 2 years.
Mm.
But there's a lot of stories, a lot of fashion shows, and a lot of hairstyle things, a lot of stunts. Stunts were a big thing.
Hmm.
And, you know, like crashing an airplane into the barn or a Model T over a bunch of other Model Ts.
It sounds like the messages in a lot of those newsreels were more positive. It wasn't, as we associate with the news now, I mean, we rarely see positive stories. You know, it's a lot of doom and gloom and negativity. So,
well, there wasn't a lot. Based on my research, there was some spin, but there wasn't a lot of spin.
Mm-hmm.
And also in those times, you had the 10 minutes of the newsreels twice a week.
Yeah.
So they didn't spend a lot, based on what I found, they did not spend a lot of time on trying to slant it too terribly much.
Mm.
But I assume in the mud-raking period of newspapers, they did a lot of it there, so I'm sure there was some of it around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, everything from covering polar bears in a zoo to... The Prohibition was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, I bet it would have been, yeah.
A lot of disasters, you know, fireworks, explosions,
mm-hmm.
To natural disasters, volcanoes, you know, that kind of stuff. And it wasn't just about the United States either. They covered with I don't know the right word off the top of my head, but with the other newsreel companies around the world, they had exchange privileges, if you would. And so they covered not only the United States, but if something went on in Russia or something went off in Australia, eventually they get the pictures of it and put it in there.
I didn't know that there was an international type of connection back then. That's so interesting.
Well, Universal was, just one. And it was also the most underfunded of all out of the ones.
Oh, really?
So they probably mostly stayed here in the United States and got their world information and film from other newsreel makers like Pathé,
mm-hmm.
Over in France,
mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuff. So, and they were much more international than the Universal newsreel.
Mm.
So there were a lot of exchanges going on, and in some, there's so many events going on all at the same time, there was also some cooperation between the different newsreel organizations here in the state, because why send five different cameramen to the same thing when one can do it and they can pull it?
Oh,
so they did that some, too. But if it was a big thing like Lindbergh or Amelia Earhart or the president or something like that, they would send their own crews.
Yeah. I don't think we'd see these types of companies working together today, the news
not
corporation.
Not as much, but
but
you'd be surprised where some of the news film goes through today, like CNN's footage.
Mm-hmm.
They get that from almost everywhere. They buy it, or it's an exchange or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's put on a server, and the network that they want to pay for a small fee
mm-hmm.
Can have access to it.
Okay.
So some of that does go on. We just never know about it.
We don't know about it. Oh, that's so interesting. So in your opinion on the technological advances that we've seen in film and media today, what do you think when you look back and you see these newsreels from over 80 years ago, do you think that technology has benefited us, or do you like the old style of film?
I'm biased. I like the old stuff.
Yeah, I bet. I knew you were going to say that.
If it's in black and white, it's great,
Yeah. It's completely different media.
Yeah, to me. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different medium, but also it covers and shows the way life was back then, and it's totally different from today.
Mm-hmm.
It was slower. It was just as weird, believe it or not. And there is still the wars, and there were still the bad guys, and there is still all sorts of bad things going on, but at the same time, there was many good things going on. And I find that there's more good feel stories in the newsreel than today's news.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to present a balance. Not everything was bad. And if you watch the news today, I don't know, it depends where you live in the country, I guess, but, it seems to me that 95% of everything we hear during the evening news is not positive.
No, exactly. And that would be, I wanted to know, as you have done your research, so many years of research, what you notice to be the big differences and maybe some of the similarities. But, that would be one thing that I would think would be the biggest difference would be just the nature, the positive, negative nature.
And we could do a whole other show on that.
Yeah. Well, I think the motives for why the news is being projected out into, I don't know. Yeah, we could get into it. We could get into it. So what else are you working on at this point?
This is like an ever-growing thing. I look at what I'm doing now and trying to get it out there. For 2009, I've got a book coming out called America's Film Vault. That's a reference guide to the motion pictures in the National Archives, not just a certain segment, not just Universal, but everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of an overview than it is specific.
Mm-hmm.
But there's film, and the way the National Archives is organized and by record groups, and that means something to somebody. And but each one's a category, and inside those categories is usually hidden, in my mind, some film.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of that particular book was to identify which ones had film and give examples of the types of films that they had in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that book is. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for X, you can go into the book and scan it, and you can find out, or through the index, you can scan it and say, okay, if I'm looking for X, in this particular record group, I will find X, Y, and Z in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can try to follow and figure out where to look.
Mm-hmm.
Another book for 09 is going to be the second volume of this particular book, Projected History. I'll be covering 31 and 32 on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 10, I'm already scheduling 10 and 11, believe it or not.
Wow.
I have another book called Aerial Aces of the Universal Newsreel. And this particular book is just aviation-related stories. But unlike Projected History, what I'm doing in this book is I've actually gone back and I have the narration scripts.
Oh, wow.
Of each one of these newsreels. So in the book, very little editing, I stuck those in there and also then did a specific scene-by-scene description of what's in the film and then put some production notes if I found them in the paper records. So it's more detailed
mm-hmm.
of Projected History. Projected mm-hmm. History has basically the title, a description that was actually written in 1929 and 1930.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's interesting in itself, reading some of those descriptions.
Yeah, they are kind of interesting, and they're written in the vernacular of the time.
Exactly.
Which makes it challenging in today's environment.
Right.
But I left everything alone, and I put a warning in my introduction to the book.
Oh, gosh.
In addition to that, the other big book I'm working on now is and I've just started on this one. This one is tentatively called Manufacturing, Motoring, and Aviating. It's the motion pictures of the Ford Motor Company Photographic Laboratory.
Oh, wow.
And the National Archives has 3,000-plus titles that were given to them by the Ford Motor Company in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And there hasn't been an effort to identify all those and correlate them with the catalog number, so if you're looking for X, you can actually find it.
Uh-huh.
There was a book 20 or 25 years ago saying, this is what's in here, but we won't tell you how to find it.
Oh,
okay?
That's not very helpful.
No, so what I'm doing is using that book not even as a basis, but just knowing it's there,
uh-huh.
I'm going back through all the paper records. I'm not trying to view them all. I'm viewing a couple.
Uh-huh.
But the paper records on all this and finding out nobody what it is, what is the description of it, and also put in there the actual catalog number so somebody that wanted to see that can find it.
Uh-huh.
So those are the type of things that I'm into coming up on the future.
That is incredibly detailed work that you're doing. You're very much a documentarian. If that's even a word.
It is. Anal is another word.
Yeah.
But
this is necessary because this will be lost if it isn't categorized.
The counterpoint to this is the National Archives is taking the view that they're putting everything on a big computer server and people are able to research all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have it done by 2016 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
My point is I don't trust computers. I guess I'm from the old school.
You never know what can happen.
And you'll never have this again.
Exactly. Yeah.
So my other reason for doing it is get it in print.
Mm-hmm.
A little reverse technology here.
Mm-hmm.
And try to put it out there where it's always going to be available.
So tell us.
Printed or digital format.
Yeah, wonderful. So tell us what it is about this kind of deeply researched, historical type of work that you're doing, what it is for you that keeps you going, because you have to be very dedicated. There must be something that is really driving you personally to do this.
One is because I think, one of my little mottos is to see history as it actually happens is enlightening, instructive, and often dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of is one of my focuses.
Mm-hmm.
A second one is the fact that our country has a very rich collection of motion pictures, and my desire is to make sure the people know that it's there and that it's preserved and accessible for future generations. So those are two things. And the third thing is I'm not a spring chicken anymore, and if I want to do a brain dump, I better get with it.
Yeah,
you know, because
great.
I have a lot of records, and I have a lot of stuff stuffed in that brain of mine.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to get it out there and just put it out there and allow people to use it to their advantage, then I got X number of years, whatever God's going to give me to get this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three drivers.
Those are the drivers. It's, you know, the second point that you mentioned about how I don't know, it just seems like going back in history really, it's important that we know our history and going back to film these old films and the newsreels. I mean, it really shows how far we've come. It gives us a great indication of who we are today and why we are.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
300%.
Yeah, yeah. So interesting. So let's mention your website again, Phil. It's pwstewart.com. And I know you have additional information up there, that articles, that sort of thing?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And photos of some of the, especially in the Battle Film book and the War Wings book, there's some photos that I had way too many to put in the book, so I put them up on the webpage. So
mm-hmm.
They're buried inside the book area, and some of them are very fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Such interesting work. Well, I'm so happy that you're doing what you're doing and that you're really raising awareness to the National Archives. I mean, I had no idea. It must be a huge facility.
It is. I don't know how many thousands of square feet, but it's three or four floors and well over, I don't know, 500,000 square feet or more.
Wow.
So there's a lot of footage up there, and it's available for people to go visit.
Yeah.
I wish more people would take advantage of it.
Well, next time I go to D.C., I don't have any plans, but when I do, I will definitely go check it out because that is just fascinating. So fascinating.
I hope you do.
Yeah. Thank you, Phil. It's been really wonderful talking with you. I know we will talk again in the future sometime, but all the best to you and continued success with your work.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, listeners, that's been Philip W. Stewart. Very interesting work that he is doing. His latest project is Projected History, a catalog of the national stories produced by Universal Newsreel, and it is volume 1 from 1929 to 1930, and so in the coming years you'll see the subsequent volumes coming out. Very, very interesting. His website is pwstewart.com. Check it out. There's a lot of additional info up there. So I want to thank you once again for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.